And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
Okay. Hey, everybody out there. Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you reclaim that which you have always been and are. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between, because each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and the relationship that we have with God or the divine. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or maybe just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the websites. The first one is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And the second one is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And you can leave comments in both of those or both on those websites. And if you take a notion to it and like to want to call in and be part of the show, the number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, don't sweat it. It's okay. These broadcasts are podcasted. So in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, just go on the Reclaiming Authenticity, the bbsradio.com Reclaiming Authenticity website. There we go. And look around. You should be able to find any of the shows that you want to listen to or any that you have missed. And just also like to say that these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM out of New York on the weekends. Well, before we get into the subject for this evening, and I think you're really going to enjoy it because it all talks about the glimpses of oneness or our unique connectedness throughout eternity, I just titled this broadcast, you know, very specifically. You know, we share such a unique connectedness with all things and all people, and that cuts across all, you know, time and space. I've just seen it happen again and again and again. But I just want to take a quick moment here and just because a lot of people ask me, like, why is there so much an emphasis on the integration of spirituality and our mental health? Well, to share with you a quick story. A friend of mine, Harold Koenig, a doctor, he is the director for the Center of Spirituality, Theology, and Health down in North Carolina. And he's also a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences. And he writes about this integration of what does spirituality have to do with mental health. And if you want to take a look at that article that he wrote, it's in the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry back in 2008. And he wrote that there are many ways in which, let's say, religious and spiritual beliefs and practices may be important resources for, let's say, a person coping with illness. In other words, the research shows a connection between one's beliefs and a sense of your well-being, such as the positive beliefs that you have, or provides a sense of comfort or inner strength that's gained from your religion or spirituality or meditation and prayer, just to name a few. Now, improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness. It just might, Okay. But let's just say that it may not cure an illness, but it does help you feel better. It does give you the coping skills. It allows you to enhance just an overall positive sense of well-being. So there are many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and spirituality. And this is actually where I come in because I have a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find the courage to reclaim that which has always been in them. And people don't really know where to go inward, let's say, to be able to find everything that they brought into this world, as well as who they have always been and are. Okay, because I have a solid belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life. I mean, we lack nothing. We come into this world with gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits and so on and so forth, the very best of who you are. And how we live out, let's say, our giftedness is in and through various relationships. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express these identically. So, in other words, each of us has a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. We try to imitate others, okay, let's face it, but no one has the ability to duplicate us. No one has the ability to duplicate you, because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hacheitas, my favorite Latin word, hacheitas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. Or, as I explain it to kids, it's like everybody has a thumbprint. Everybody has a thumbprint, but no two thumbprints are alike. And that's their uniqueness. That's their hacheitas. Okay. And, therein lies the importance, this realization of who we truly are. Well, welcome again to tonight's show. I think that you're going to really enjoy this. Again, the title is Glimpses of Oneness, Unique Connectedness Throughout Eternity. So let's start off with a question. I just love tossing out questions there just to ponder. And of course, when we get into it, we really go deep. So here's the question. How many of us out there have ever bumped into somebody by accident? How many of us have ever bumped into another person by accident? We're out running errands and simply going about our business, or maybe the other person is going about theirs. And we bump into them, we run into them. Or let's say we're trying to get through a crowd and our clothes are gently brushing against another person or so forth. Now, most of the time, we don't even think twice about this, or maybe we just respond with a very polite, "Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I wasn't watching where I was going." Now, is there anything that would make us believe that running into another person was nothing more than a chance encounter? Maybe, maybe not. But what if running into another person was a moment that was supposed to happen all along? What if it couldn't be helped? Or, with the benefit of hindsight, that we realize that there was a deeper lesson we needed to learn from that other person, and vice versa. You see, why we're all busy trying to get to where we need to go, and then maybe we complain because, well, I was in a hurry and I just ran into this person, or they were in a hurry and they ran into me. We just may have missed something more important that needs our attention that day. And this sheds a different light on the subject, doesn't it? In fact, excuse me, the lessons we ask to be shown and learn from. Maybe we put it out there in a prayer to the universe, and I've done this many times. This aspect is something I've come to appreciate every time I'm out and about. And I usually typically offer up a little prayer, just asking, allow me to meet somebody who I need to talk with today. Or Maybe they need to talk with me, or whatever happens, happens. And I found that this makes running errands or completing tasks or whatever we're doing out in the world more meaningful. Because let's just say, for the sake of argument, that when you run into another person in a store, you realize that perhaps in the grand scheme of things, it was not so much that you needed to buy eggs or iced tea, or you needed to go shopping for a new dress or whatever. But perhaps the real reason that you went to the store in the first place was because you needed to talk to that specific person. Or maybe that specific person needed to talk to you. And we have many examples of these so-called chance encounters that it is worth paying attention to. In other words, what's really important in our lives at any given moment, as well as understanding just how much we are connected to one another. I used to believe that, you know, we're all strangers, but I don't believe that anymore. I feel the connection with others. I see the connection. I hear the connection with others. And so a so-called chance encounter of bumping into somebody, I look at like, okay, that's the important thing that needed to happen today, not what I needed to get done or not what I needed to go to a store, let's just say, to pick something up. Okay. Well, you know, the real reason I bring up this phenomenon is because I recently saw the 2023 movie Past Lives. Okay, it's a Korean movie. And for those of you who haven't seen it yet, I would recommend watching it. It's typical fashion. It's a slow burn, but you got to stay with the story. Okay, because it is a Korean movie about an ongoing relationship between a man and a woman at various stages in their lives. You know, it starts off with childhood, and then it moves them into later adolescence, and then to their middle age, you know, middle adulthood ages, let's just say. And, you know, they have gone their own separate ways. You know, they lived separate lives, and then they wanted to reconnect, and they found like that special connection was still there. Now, all throughout the movie, there is a Korean phrase that keeps coming up in various situations, and that phrase is in yo, which is interpreted as two people having a special connection, often described as having a fate or sharing a destiny. But there's also a deeper meaning to this phrase in yo. It's grounded in a Buddhist philosophy, and it carries with it the wisdom of a connection shared by two people that is a result of their actions and relationships in previous lives. And this connection is not necessarily a romantic one that we often see in other movies, okay? Instead, think of In Young as being more of a linking of souls across lifetimes. Or, in the movie itself, the main character, Nora, the woman, puts it, in Yon can also mean that if two strangers walk by one another and their clothes accidentally touch, there must have been something between them in a previous encounter. I like that understanding. Okay, in other words, it's just not left up to chance. And, you know, if you out there had seen the movie Forrest Gump, you know, kind of is on this. You know, he raises a question, you know, very close to In Yon. But, you know, Forrest is trying to figure out as he's looking back on his life, and he says, you know, I don't know if we each have a destiny or if we're all just floating around accidental-like on a breeze. But I think maybe it's both. Maybe both is happening at the same time. And that's a direct quote from the movie Forrest Gump. But I don't think we're just floating around, you know, as the, you know, one of the main props there was this feather that he had, and it's just carried on by the wind, and it just everything is accidental. We don't really have control over things. I don't know if I necessarily believe that, but yeah, okay. It was a great part in the movie. But getting back to the phrase en yong, Now, whether or not you believe in reincarnation or destiny or fate, okay, I really want us to focus on the people in our lives whom we see day in and day out, especially the people whom we don't see. You know, the ones who work behind the scenes, the invisible people, as it were, you know, whom we pass by every day, but we never notice. Do we have a connection with them? We sure do. There was one of my favorite cute stories out there is about one day a woman who was very studious about her spirituality was engaged in what's called a walking meditation in the park. She was deep in her meditation and not really watching where she was going, but she was able to overhear various conversations from people talking to one another and listening to people order their lunch from numerous food vendors. Now, after listening to these conversations, curiosity got the better of her. So she thought it would be a nice joke if she smiled and walked up to the hot dog vendor. And when he asked her what she wanted, she said with a big smile, "I want you to make me one with everything." Well, to her surprise, the vendor replied, "Lady, I can't make you one with everything. In fact, nobody can make you one with anything. You already are one with everything. You just haven't realized it yet." Yeah, and that's a very wise hot dog vendor indeed. And yet, how many of us perceive ourselves as lacking something that we already possess? Right? How many of us fail to see ourselves for who we truly are, let alone continue to search for that person we truly are and are becoming? And in this case, how many of us fail to understand the connection that we have with one another? Well, there's another cute story out there, one of my favorite stories that was told to me when I was in India, that really captures this idea of oneness. And I've shared this story on this program many times, and I'll share it again because it fits exactly what we're talking about here. It's called The Princess of Kashi. Now, long ago, in a kingdom in India, a play was being staged in the royal court, and it was going to be called The Princess of Kashi. Now, the role of the Princess of Kashi was to be played by a little girl. And since there were no little girls in the palace, the queen thought that, well, we have a prince who was 5 years old at the time. You know, the prince, we could dress him up as a girl and let him play that role. Now, the role wasn't a big one, and all the prince had to do was just stand there. I mean, he looked so adorable as a princess that the queen ordered a painting of him to be made. And when the painting was done, the artist brushed in the words at the bottom, "The Princess of Kashi," and he dated it. Well, after some years, this painting was taken down to the palace cellar, and it was just stored there. And by now, the prince was a young man of 20. He was a good-looking, confident, smart guy, and he was being trained in the affairs of one day he will be ruler. So one day, he was just wandering through the palace, probably bored out of his mind, but he found a set of stairs leading to the cellar and decided to explore, okay, just what's down there. And as he was walking around, he found this painting of a little girl dressed up in a royal garb. And underneath, he read what was written, "The Princess of Kashi." And looking at the date, he realized that the princess in the painting would be the same age as he was. I mean, she was so pretty that the prince immediately fell in love with her. And he decided right then and there that he would marry no one but her. And he became obsessed. He became dreamy. He became preoccupied with thoughts of the Princess of Kashi. He lost his focus on his princely activities and responsibilities. And this caught the eye of the king and the queen, who noticed a change in his mood and behavior. And they were quite concerned. And they asked this prince what was wrong, but he was just simply too shy to tell them. So finally, the king and queen called for a kind old minister of the court to meet with the prince and just ask him, what's wrong? Why are you not yourself these days? And after gently reassuring the prince that, yes, I will keep your secret, the minister was able to coax out a reply. I'm in love, said the prince bashfully. Oh, that's great news, said the minister. Who is she? Where is she? Well, she's the Princess of Kashi. I saw a painting of her in the royal cellar. The date of the painting shows that she would be 20 years old, just like me, and I want to marry her. And on hearing these words, the minister became silent, and he started to think. He knew he had heard of the Princess of Kashi before, but he just couldn't remember when and where. And so he asked the prince, can you show me this painting? And the prince took him down to the royal cellar. And when the minister saw the painting, he immediately recognized who the princess was. And placing his hand on the prince's shoulder, this kind-hearted minister looked him in the eye and said in a very serious tone, I have to tell you something. What is it? Asked the prince, sensing that something was wrong. The minister said, you can't marry this girl. Why not? Asked the prince. Is she already married? Is she dead? Well, the minister went on then to tell him the story of the play that was staged 15 years ago and how he, the prince, was dressed up as a girl and made to play the role of the Princess of Kashi. Dear prince, you can't marry her because you are the Princess of Kashi. The prince was in shock and bewilderment as he heard the minister's words. And on realizing the truth that the Princess of Kashi didn't exist, that he himself was what he was yearning for, his desire for the princess melted away. So, in other words, he was already one with the person in the picture. He just didn't realize it yet. He did not understand the connectedness he had from the beginning, as if, you know, he kept seeing himself separate from the person in the picture. So the question then for us is just how well do we know ourselves? Because one of the most important questions we ask ourselves at least twice, if not more, in our lives is the question, who am I? Now, according to the developmental psychologist out there, we first begin asking this question of who am I around 4 years old, you know, in terms of, you know, who am I? Like, what do I have? You know, I'm a boy. I have this. She's a girl and she has that. I have a body. I have hair. I mean, we ask these questions in terms of a self-discovery of who we are when we look into the mirror. Now, the second time we ask this question is somewhere in our early 20s, only this time asking, who am I, has to do more with an internal self-discovery of how we want to live our lives. I mean, we look back and like, okay, what values and morals have I been raised with? And now, which ones do I want to keep? Which ones do I want to let go? What's really important to me? And what are some things that are not so much, and so forth. How well do we really know ourselves? Knowing who we are is probably where most people struggle to understand, striving to be one with everything. But you know, oneness on one level has to do more with understanding how we are connected to all people and all things. So, for example, nice little exercise if you're looking to like, how do I put this into practice? Let's say that you want to add sugar to your morning coffee, okay? Being one with everything does not mean that we become the sugar that we put in our coffee, but rather we're connected to the sugar in terms of the people who have supplied the sugar to the stores and all the employees who work there, as well as we are connected to the growers who planted and harvested the cane, which will eventually become sugar that we add to our coffee. And out of this awareness comes a sense of deep gratitude and respect for all that we have received by the hard work and efforts of others. And as a result, realizing our oneness or our connection with all people and all things, we ought to never take for granted anything in our lives, but rather it should cultivate us, in us, I should say, a gratitude and a deep sense of compassion for all people who supply things we use every day. Even developing a gratitude for people we bump into. Again, there's no such thing as a chance encounter. When we have this understanding, we realize that everything is a gift. And this makes much more sense, because whether or not we realize it, we are connected to everyone and all things, directly or indirectly. And when we think about it, we are interconnected to all things and all people in, let's say, a universal awareness. But oneness and connectedness in the spiritual sense goes much, much deeper, because it involves who we are at our core, rather than who we know. Well, last broadcast, I remember I was talking about that when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed, not by the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also the belief that an inner freedom or an inner peace or a joy or unconditional love are just simply all too good to be true. You know, that those things belong to somebody else. I'm just not worthy of that. But the truth is that we possess this key to unlock our doors to an inner freedom, grace, and peace like we have never known before. And so the question then becomes, how open am I to wanting to really know who I am? You see, this is where these chance encounters, so to speak, come into play. We bump into somebody, and maybe that's you're supposed to bump into them. You know, are we paying attention? Are we open to the lessons? Again, maybe it had nothing to do with us going to the store to buy something, but maybe it had everything to do with the fact that we needed to talk to that person, or they needed to talk to us. Or holding a door for somebody, holding it open, or smiling. A simple smile. You never know how that's going to affect another person, because your smile might be the only smile they get that day, or your kind word might be the only kind word they hear all day. So again, no such thing as a chance encounter. I think with knowing that we are so connected and we have this oneness, whether or not we realize it, we're bound to bump in to one another sooner or later. The real question is, are we paying attention? Well, I really want to hear your thoughts on this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'm going to be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. Again, I am Dr. James Hauck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Now, earlier in the show, I actually started off the show by asking one simple question. How many of us have ever bumped into another person by accident? You know, and I'm sure I can see the hands going up right now. It's like, oh, yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I've run into a lot of people. They run into me and so forth. You know, we're out running errands and just simply going about our business, and we just bump into another person. Okay. And most of the time, you know, we don't really pay any attention to it. We just don't pay any mind to it, or we don't even think twice about it. We just maybe respond with just a very polite, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. Now, is there anything that would make us believe that running into another person was nothing more than a chance encounter? Maybe. Okay, but let's go a little deeper with this. What if running into another person was a moment that was supposed to happen all along? You know, in other words, what if it couldn't be helped? Or, you know, as we look back over, you know, our day or whatever, our lives, we realize that there was a deeper lesson we needed to learn in that chance encounter. Because, you know, while we're busy trying to get to where we need to go, and then we bump into another person and we complain about it and we just say, okay, I'm sorry, yeah, I'm sorry. We just may have missed something more important that needed our attention that day. And this really sheds a different light on this whole notion of, is there really chance encounters in this world? In fact, I'm convinced that the lessons that we ask to be shown and the lessons that we learn from often come through the most unlikely times, through the most unlikely places, through the most unlikely people. And this is an aspect, something I've really come to embrace. Every time I'm out and about, I get in the car, I just offer up a little prayer, and just, you know, allow me to meet someone today who I need to talk with or who needs to talk with me. And this really makes, you know, if I'm out and about running errands or completing tests, it really makes the day more meaningful. Because let's say when you run into another person in a store, you realize that perhaps in the grand scheme of things, it's not so much that you needed to go to the store in the first place. Okay. But perhaps the real reason you went to the store was because you needed to talk to a very specific person. Or maybe that person needed to talk with you. And we have many examples of these so-called chance encounters, you know, but it is worth paying attention to what's really important in our lives at any given moment, as well as understanding how much we are connected to one another. Okay? And earlier in the movie, I just brought out the fact that I watched the Korean movie Past Lives, and just really fascinated by a particular word. And its meaning kept coming out. It was like the red thread that held the entire movie and the characters together. And that word is inyong, which is interpreted as two people having a special connection, which many people would describe as, well, that's a fate or that's destiny. Okay. Kind of reminds me of when Darth Vader is trying to explain to Luke, you know, as Luke's hanging on for his life in The Empire Strikes Back, that, you know, look, you cannot run. I am your father, and it is your destiny to, you know, go before the Emperor, you know, and to serve the Emperor. And Luke fought this very much. So that's what comes to my mind when I think of the word destiny. But there's also a deeper meaning to this phrase, you know, enyong. It is grounded in just a very deep Buddhist philosophy. And it has this wisdom of a connection shared by two people that is a result of their actions and relationships in previous lives. So, you know, for those who believe in reincarnation, it would be as though, like, what we do in this life will determine who we, let's say, bump into our next life. Again, no such thing as a chance encounter. Okay, but that's the deeper meaning here with the word enyong, you know, and we are going to have connections with people because we are connected with people. And this in-yon connection is not necessarily a romantic one that, you know, we see in the movies. Like, oh, I can't wait for my soulmate. Or I can't wait that I bumped into this person and, like, maybe that's the person I'm supposed to spend the rest of my life with. Maybe, maybe not. But there's a key, a reason why you bumped into that person or why they bumped into you. Okay? Now, again, whether or not you believe in reincarnation or, let's say, destiny, or whether or not you believe in fate, I just want us to really focus on the people in our lives, you know, whom we see every day, day in and day out. But how many times do we pass by other people whom we don't see? You know, let's just call them the invisible people, as it were. People who work behind the scenes, who just quietly go about their business and do what needs to be done, and we just pass them, and maybe we offer just a simple good morning or have a nice night or something. But the people that we don't see, do we have a connection with them as well? Well, we do. We do. Because I think everything that we think and say and do contains energy. And unless we are open and teachable to these so-called chance encounters, you know, we're going to miss out how we transform our thoughts as energy or our actions as energy. You know, and perhaps the energy exchanged in these so-called chance encounters was to heal us on a deeper level or to heal them on a deeper level. Okay. And it's kind of interesting here. This is the phenomenon I run to again and again as I counsel clients who want to heal from their past, or they want to improve their relationships, or they just want to be left alone. They don't want to struggle anymore, or whatever it is. Okay. But whatever the person is struggling with from other relationships, more than likely, they're also struggling with the same issue in themselves. So it's, you know, in this case, it's a negative energy that's being sent out. And as you've heard me say on many times throughout this broadcast, many different broadcasts, you know, we live in an echo. Whatever energy is being sent out echoes back to us sooner or later. So again, this, you know, concept of a chance encounter, what's the energy exchange? Is it negative? Is it positive? Is it healing? Was it something that we may not even be aware of what was going on? But I think we really need to be open and teachable in those moments that God shows up in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people. Now, getting back to this negative energy that, you know, people send out, that's going to echo back to them sooner or later. You know, I think of it this way. I have a couple of examples here that, let's say a person who is filled with bitterness from a hurt or betrayal, you know, in their, you know, the previous decade or so, if it's not healed, will view everything and feel everything perhaps from a lens of bitterness. Or a person who has experienced a tremendous hurt from a broken trust or a broken heart in a relationship. Now, unless this is healed and transformed, they're going to view everything and everyone with suspicion. Okay? So let's go back to these so-called chance encounters when we bump into somebody. Maybe, just maybe, again, in the grand scheme of things, you might be part of a person's healing process through their previous hurt or their betrayal or a broken trust or a broken heart or whatever the situation is. And vice versa. I mean, if we are struggling with these issues ourselves and we bump into somebody or they bump into us, you never know what kind of energy was exchanged that perhaps would move us a little further along in this process of healing. Okay. But this is very difficult for people to understand about the phenomena of emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. You know, what goes out has to first come from within. And unless things change in our lives, we're going to act out of our wounds. You know, hurt people hurt people. Wounded people wound people. And maybe this so-called chance encounter was something that needed to happen so a deeper healing could take place. It could be a physical healing. It could be a healing all the way down to the cellular level. It could be an emotional healing. It could be a spiritual healing. And it could be a mental health issue that is being healed. You know, it's just incremental healing. A process of healing is taking place that somehow, some way, you got to be part of. You know? So certainly, how we are with others is often how we are with ourselves, and vice versa. And how we see each other is often how we see ourselves. And unresolved and unhealed wounds really distort how we view and interact with the world. Are we going to feel that connection when we have unresolved or unhealed wounds? Probably not. We may tell ourselves, oh, I'm connected, but do we really feel it? Do we live it out? Does it come up in our conversations? Does it come up when we accidentally, so-called, run into these chance encounters? We bump into others. Now, in severe cases, you know, an unhealed trauma can be passed down genetically because it attaches itself to our DNA and just very covertly disguises itself as a harmful physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual symptoms. So, you know, just as intergenerational trauma is passed down through, let's say, society and families, you know, and what we carry in our genes and how we were raised and so on and so forth, you know, there's also various social systems out there that galvanize harmful stereotypes and prejudices and injustices and emotional dependence and biases and so on and so forth. Okay. Maybe, again, this so-called chance encounter was meant to be in order to help heal somebody through their intergenerational trauma. You know, because intergenerational trauma is not just limited to how it affects our families, but it also affects all relationships, from the most intimate to the mere acquaintances in our lives, even bumping into a stranger. And this realization is a significant, I'm convinced of this, it's a significant aspect of healing relationships. It occurs when we're able to just kind of take a step back and try to understand what has so wounded another person and what has so wounded ourselves as to allow us to continuously act out of our woundedness and yet expect different results. It's impossible. But trying to understand, what are the wounds that another person carry? What are the wounds that I carry? What are the wounds that you carry? Because it does affect our relationships. And it will affect these chance encounters when we bump into somebody. Okay. And I have to say from personal experience that by understanding the background of those who have hurt me, it's allowed me to take the necessary steps closer to forgiving and releasing the burdens of carrying around my wounds any longer. You know, and this goes right to the heart of forgiveness. Okay. In a sense, that is forgiveness. You know, when somebody comes and asks our forgiveness for whatever they've done or whatever they've said, you know, and we say, okay, you're forgiven. You know, thank you for asking, and yes, you're forgiven. In a sense, what we're telling them is that we no longer want them to carry the weight of their wounds. You know, we want them to put it down. You don't have to carry it any longer. You know, we want them to also be unburdened by any weight of bitterness or unforgiveness or shame, humiliation, or whatever pain they have suffered from in the past that continues to influence how they think and say and act in harmful ways. And again, this is where we often see ourselves as being separate from everyone else and all things. But for the person that we have, let's say, accidentally bumped into, we may believe that we have nothing in common with that person. And this would be true if all we did was focus on the externals. But what if we allowed ourselves to see one another as souls? You know, namaste. Because I see myself as a lighted soul allows me to see your lighted soul, even if you don't see it in yourself yet. What if we allowed ourselves to see one another as souls? That we didn't just accidentally bump into somebody, but we bumped into a soul that we have a connection to. I mean, then we would understand the oneness or the connection we have with others, regardless of race and class and creed and culture and stereotypes and prejudices and stigmas and language. I mean, and this is all the more reason why it's important to see the divine in everyone. And when we're ready, I'm convinced, again, God opens up for us a profound understanding of who we are as souls. Because when we look at each other as souls, we soon discover and we see ourselves as souls. We begin to realize that the externals just don't matter. There's no more sexism. There's no more racism. There's no more ageism. There's simply no more isms out there because they just simply can't hold up to the standard that we are all souls, or that we are all children of light, or that we are all droplets of water returning to the ocean. We're no different from one another, albeit the externals, albeit the diversity. So why do we have these externals when we're here on Earth as an embodied soul? Some would say that we're an embodied soul because of the karma that we had in the previous life, you know, of what our soul still needs to work out in terms of the lessons that, you know, one needs to heal from in order to, and needs to take place. And we're often reminded of the wounds and the habits or the choices or whatever that we make is really how we're working out our karma. And these things often come to us through the externals, okay, through maybe an illness or a disease or another experience, and that we have whatever lessons there are for us to learn the deeper meanings. A chance encounter is not just a chance encounter. If there's only one thing that you remember from tonight's broadcast, it's that no such thing as chance encounters. We share such a tremendous connectedness. We share just the understanding that we are souls. We're not just floating on a cloud somewhere and being carried on the wind like a feather, hoping to land somewhere. No such thing as a chance encounter. But think of it, that stranger that you bumped into, maybe that was the exact same person that you needed to meet that day, that soul, and recognizing them as a soul and not the externals. Well, Anthony DeMello, you've heard me talk about him many times. He was truly one of those spiritual teachers and mentors who always sought to empower others and to bring them to higher states of self-awareness and self-discovery. And he was always fond of telling this story to illustrate, you know, that we can let go of former things in order to take hold of something better. And he begins this story, you know, as, you know, there's a villager in India who happened upon a sannyasi. Now, a sannyasi is a wandering enlightened one, you know, who, having attained enlightenment, understands that the whole world is his home, that the sky is his roof, and that God will look after him. And so he just simply moves from place to place, the way you and I, let's say, move from one room to another in our home. Well, this villager meets this sannyasi. Again, is there anything such as a chance encounter? Not in this case. And the villager says, "I cannot believe this," he says to the sannyasi when their paths crossed, or when they, let's say, bumped into each other. And the sannyasi says, what is it that you can't believe? Well, the villager says, I had a dream about you last night. I dreamt that the Lord said to me, tomorrow morning, you will leave the village around 11 o'clock, and you're going to run into this wandering sannyasi. And here, look, I've met you. Well, what else did the Lord say to you? Asked the sannyasi. And the villager replied, well, he said to me that if this man gives you a precious stone that he has, you will be the richest man in the whole world. Well, kind sir, would you give me this stone? Well, the sannyasi tells the villager, just, okay, hang on a second. And he rummages around through his knapsack and he retrieves this object. And he pulls it out and he says, would this be the stone you're talking about? And he handed it to the villager. Now, the villager just simply couldn't believe his eyes. I mean, it was the largest diamond in the world. He had never seen anything like it. And now he gets to hold this diamond in his hands and he asks, can I have this? Well, yeah, of course, the sannyasi said. Take it. I found it near the river, and you're welcome to it. And the villager bows, and he takes the diamond, and he just runs away to sit under a tree on the outskirts of the village, you know, and he clutches the diamond to his heart, and he experiences great joy. Okay, and it's just, you know, it's kind of like the experience of joy when we get something we really want. But do we ever ask how long the joy lasts? Will it stop? You know, think of it this way. You finally got the girl you wanted, okay? Or you finally got the boy you wanted. Or you finally worked so hard you were able to get that car. Or you got the degree. Or you were top of the class. Or whatever it is that brings you joy. How long does it last? How many seconds? How many minutes? Now, eventually you get tired of it, don't you? And now you're off looking for something else to replace it with so that you can keep manufacturing this happiness. So the villager sat under the tree all day, just really clutching this diamond. And he became immersed in thought and disturbed that night when he went to sleep. He tossed and turned all night, really didn't get a good night's sleep. And in the morning, he goes back down to the river where the sannyasi was meditating, and he gives him back this diamond. He says, Master, thank you for letting me have this, but here, I'm going to give this back to you. But could you do me one more favor? What is it? Said the sannyasi. The villager replied, could you give me the inner riches that you have? That makes it possible for you to so easily give away this thing that would have made you the richest man in the world? Letting go of former things in order to take hold of something better. And if we're capable of sending out negative energy from unresolved emotional, physical, psychological, and spiritual wounds, then I guarantee you that we can also send out through our thoughts, our words, and our actions, positive energy, healing energy that gives life, healing and grace, because they all come from a place of woundedness within us that has been healed and transformed. All from a so-called chance encounter. So I invite you to pay attention. Not just to where you're walking, but pay attention to the people that you bump into day in and day out. There just might be a lesson there. There just might be a kindness that needs to exchange, or a positive energy that needs to be exchanged, or something. And vice versa. Maybe what they have is something that can help us further along in our healing process. You never know. And that's why there's great significance in bumping into another person who is a soul, another person who is a child of light, another person whom we share a great connection with. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me this evening. And in the meantime, till we talk again in 2 weeks, can everybody out there behave themselves? Can everybody out there please be safe? And may everybody be filled with tremendous, tremendous light and joy. Take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.